Shoes. Recorded live.
Hi, welcome to our program tonight. Tonight we're going to look at Stop the Cop. We do have a lot of information on Stop the Cop out on our website. So if you click on our judicial page, newyorkcommittymen.org on the left side, you click on our judicial page, and you will come to a page, and I think that's the page that Stop the Cop is on, if I recall. Wait a second. That might be on the next one. You have to push on Common Law, I think, and then you get in and you get the video on Stop the Cop. Now, someone did do a typing. I just got that in the email. They typed that particular scenario out from the judge to the individual in the courtroom, back and forth in the different scenarios. And so I will post that shortly. We don't suggest necessarily that you pursue that particular way through the court because the judge will get frustrated, but he's really not going to answer, and you may get frustrated. We do have a better way to deal with this, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And this is a paper we wrote, and it has not been posted yet up online. I don't think we posted it yet. I think we just perfected it over the weekend. We've been working on it for a while. We have a lot of experience, some experience anyway, of dealing with these town courts. And when you go into these town courts and you reject their jurisdiction and challenge it, they go into cardiac arrest. We come up with many different things and come back at them, and they don't know how to handle it, and then they postpone the case another day to come back for another hearing, and they keep coming back and coming back and coming back. Oh, we're going to do the arraignment next week. They never get to the arraignment. The key thing on this is as long as they don't arraign you, you cannot be. They have no power over you. You must give them consent. And this is what we're going to talk about tonight. This is key. First of all, what we have to realize is that statutes are not law. Lawyers practice statute. They don't practice law. They call them, you know, they call themselves lawyers, but they're statuettes or something. I don't know. But they definitely are not lawyers per se, unless you put the pretend in front of it. They're pretend lawyers, and maybe that's what we'll call them. That might be a good thing to call. Let's call them pretend lawyers. We'll be the lawyers. They'll be the pretend lawyers because they come out with pretend law. We wrote a paper, and as long as there is not an injured party and as long as there is not a jury, grand jury, indicting you, if none of those two things exist, you cannot be held liable of anything that any court brings up upon you. None. Even if something was brought up in the Supreme Court. But they will not bring up anything in the Supreme Court, the New York State Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court, unless two things, one of two things is present. One, a sworn affidavit from an injured individual, or B, a grand jury indicting you. Other than that, you're not going to court. So, unless you steal from someone or kill somebody, pretty much anything you do is for whatever you want to do. You know, I'm not saying people should take drugs or anything, and people may get upset, but if someone wants to take drugs, that's their business. Yeah, they may kill themselves, and, you know, I would like to try to talk them out of it and, you know, whatever you can do. But ultimately, they are free to do that. Unfortunately, people lost their freedom. They've lost their way. They've dumbed us down, and we don't know what real law is. Again, if there is not an injured party, there is no case. And when you go in for an arraignment and they ask you, how do you plead, innocent or guilty, or no contest, if you choose any one of the three above, then you go directly to jail, do not collect your $200, and so on. You'll get your fine or whatever the punishment may be. In some cases, of course, it is jail. So the bottom line, what I'm saying is that you get to walk down the streets of New York City with a 64-ounce bottle of Coke, and you can't get arrested for it, and you can't get fined for it. Now, they will come, someone will come out maybe and kidnap you and force you into a courtroom and maybe even send you for a little visit down to the jailhouse hotel or something. I got it for a bottle of Coke, but, you know, they will give you a fine in New York City, I guess. I there was a case recently, I think there was just deciding on that, by the way, and the judge threw it out. So that's kind of good news. But they'll still write the tickets, and they'll still bring people in, and other judges will still fine them. Maybe not this judge, but other judges will. They got a lot of minions in there. But point is if you wanted to put on a gun and strap it to your waist and walk down the street, whether you're concealed or unconcealed, it's your absolute right to do so. You might get kidnapped. They've got all these swarms of officers out there that think they're, upholding the law. And so you might get kidnapped and be hauled away, and you might end up in jail, in a hotel room. But that doesn't mean they have the right to do that. And it also doesn't mean they're going to win if you have the right attitude and the right focus, because you will win and you can win. And when you go to that hotel, you can get up to $25,000 a day for your term in there. So if you're in there for 3 months before you can finally work your way out, you get a nice chunky paycheck, which we'll talk about that next week, suing a judge. They think they can't be sued. They think they're immune. And they rest on a case, one single case, and that case is, I just printed that out. Where is it? Maybe I didn't print it out. Oh, here it is. It's on my computer. Stump versus Sparkman. Everything. This was argued in January of 1978, and it was decided in March of 78. And ever since then, they've been hanging their hat on this particular decision, and judges think they have total immunity. And guess what? Every law in New York State disagrees. U.S. Code disagrees. Every U.S. case decision disagrees. And I'm not aware of any other New York cases that agree, although I'm still researching it. We'll see if we have others. I breezed through this particular case. They try to use a lot of stupid logic, and for me it doesn't work. We're going to try to crack that code maybe next week. And in their logic, they don't have any facts. They don't base anything. They actually create law. This particular case, in my opinion, and we'll be very specific on it next week, creates law. The judge is creating law right off the bench, because he's a judge and he doesn't want to be held responsible or liable for anything he does. So he blessed another judge that was breaking the law, and all the judges hang their hat on it. But it's a very false foundation that they hang their hat on. There are cases I know throughout many states where judges are sued, and they're about to happen right here in New York State, because we're chasing quite a few of them ourselves, at least four prosecutors and four judges. Let's see, two up in Albany, and two out in Greene County, and a couple of prosecutors, because they all think they're above the law. They've taught us in school that we are law-abiding citizens, but what they really mean is that we're law-abiding slaves or statute-abiding citizens or slaves, because that's exactly what it is. Statutes do nothing but try to control your behavior. And the purpose of statutes, the only purpose of statutes, is to control the behavior of the bureaucrat. Okay, so with that, let's just quickly look at this case. I do not think I've gotten up online yet. I meant to get it up before we got started and I got distracted, but I will get it up tonight, and you'll be able to download this tomorrow. It's sort of a generic piece. The only thing you have to do if you download it, you just have to fill the name of the court up on the top, the case number, the judge's name, and your name. You call the counter plaintiff on his paper. And on the first line, it says, I, you put your name, one of the people of New York here in counter plaintiff, accepts the oaths and the bonds of all the officers of this court and moves the honorable court to quash for lack of authority of personam jurisdiction. Given that this court's jurisdiction is barred because this is a nisi prius court and not a court of record. Now, basically what that means is a nisi prius court is a court created by statutes and it rules by statutes. A court of record is a common law court. All Supreme Courts are supposed to be courts of record. So You can only be tried if you realize that you're one of the people, and that puts you above the Constitution. That does put you above the law, by the way, their law. But it doesn't put you above God's law. That's the law, that's natural law, and that's common law. So all Supreme Court are supposed to be courts of record. We'll discuss that another day. But all the town and city courts, they are nisi prius courts. They're administrative. They are not courts of record. They have absolutely zero authority over me. Even if I injured somebody, even if they came with a sworn affidavit against me in a town court, I would challenge jurisdiction and win. Now, if they realize that all they have to do is move into the Supreme Court and I'm done, if I injured somebody, of course, and I did something wrong to someone. But the point is there's no way anybody who is one of the people of New York State or any of the states of the Union, there's no way that you should allow yourself to be judged inside of a nisi prius court, a statutory court. You're going to want a common law court. And again, not to say that you're going to get that in the Supreme Court, because there are some problems there, which, again, we'll talk about that another time. But just to go quickly through this, I'm going to read off the labels of things that we've covered in this paper. This paper is 8 pages long, and as I mentioned a little earlier, we've got a little bit of experience here, and we saw all the games they played. And so with this one paper, we put a stop to all of the potential games that they're going to bring up in court and prevent them from coming forward on you, and you just make your case. We're going to write up a little procedure which will accompany this particular verified answer to the complaint, which will just give you instructions on what to do, okay? And the first thing, of course, what you do is you file this paper. That's your answer to their complaint against you, is you file the paper. And the paper is pretty much saying you don't have jurisdiction, I challenge jurisdiction, you're barred, you can't go forward. And ultimately, you don't want to talk. Anytime anything comes up, we're going to do this, or we're going to see if you're competent. They love competency hearings, which we cover that in here too. No competency hearings allowed, because you have to prove jurisdiction before you can look at my competency. And the competency they're looking for, you know, they'll take either one, psychological incompetency, intellectual incompetency, or even, of course, the big one they're chasing is legal incompetency, the inability to represent yourself. And by the way, anybody that hires a lawyer and goes to court, and that attorney, because they're an attorney now, that attorney represents you, they are representing an imbecile. Attorneys can only represent wards of the court. And anybody who is a citizen that has an attorney is labeled an imbecile. They're incapable of taking care of their own affairs, and they need a smart attorney who has gone to the New World Order schools and can represent you, because they need to be able to represent you really good in their courtroom, total control. So whether you realize it or not, that's what they call everyone that goes in there. Now, the lawyers don't realize any of this, but that's really what's going on. When you study the words and what words mean and what attorneys are and what authority and who attorneys represent and so on, it's always the wards of the court, someone who's an infant, an imbecile, someone they're just incapable of dealing with their own affairs. So what they're trying to do now is they're trying to get a competency hearing. And again, like I said, that's one of their ploys. We do prevent that from happening. You would want to prevent that if you're in court. You object. They can't go forward. You can't do nothing. And if anything, you read some of the lines in this particular paper. Either that, or you just say, it's all in the paperwork, Judge. It's all in the paperwork. And you let them know. You know, at the end of the day, when you're going home, and they'll make another date because they'll keep bringing you back and back and back, trying to figure out how they're going to get jurisdiction over you. maybe this particular paper will stop it. I know if I'm in the court and I file this paper, Before we leave the court, I'm going to let them know in no uncertain terms that if I have to come back here another day, first of all, I'm going to file a complaint with the judicial, judicial group that looks into problems. Again, I forget what it's called, judicial board or something. And we have a paper that we wrote for that, again, generic. You just have to fill in the lines and send it out to them and just follow the instructions. And they have to investigate. The second time, or maybe the same time, let them know that, well, if you're not going to let me go because I'm now in custody, the judges say you're not in custody. Well, yeah, you're in constructive custody because you have to come back to court on a certain date, and you might want to be at the beach, and you can't go to the beach, so you got to be at the court. So you're in custody. You're in constructive custody. And that has a value. I haven't went to study to see what that normal value is. I know every day in jail is $25,000 to $50,000 a day. That's what courts will award if you win the case. I don't know what constructive custody is worth, so maybe it's worth $5,000 a day. I don't know. But we'll have to figure that out, and we'll lay that out some point on our website soon. But the bottom line is if you've got to come back, then you intend on suing them. And that threat you might want to make on the first time in the case, or you might make it on the second time. But we'll write that up, again, in the details, and then again, people are free to do however they want to do it. But the best thing, unless you really become versed in this stuff, the best thing is not to answer anything in the court. Just object, say you can't go forward. You pick up one or two lines in here, can't go forward, you're barred from going forward, and you can't prove jurisdiction until you can't do that. And we're going to do this. Well, you can't do that either. You don't answer any questions. You want a jury? There's no sense in talking about that, Your Honor, because you don't have jurisdiction, and until you can prove that you have jurisdiction, by the way, you will not be able to do that. I don't have to answer any of those things. And you will frustrate the judge. They love to go to the prosecutor, who's a lawyer, because most of these judges are non-lawyers, so they don't really even know the law as far as statutes are concerned. And we know one judge is a prison guard. Maybe that's normal. I heard of another judge not long ago in a recent case that was a prison guard also. So maybe that's where they're getting their judges. Maybe they're retired prison guards. They love to send you to jail. But in any event, they have no background in statutes. Forget about the law. And they don't know what to do. They get frustrated. And they usually go and talk to the prosecutor. Now, once they start talking to the prosecutor, now that becomes a conspiracy. And so we cover that in this paper because that's what they do. They immediately go to the prosecutor. The prosecutor starts writing the papers for the judge. It starts telling the judge, this is what you've been doing. This is what, and it pumps them up, okay? Well, we're trying to disconnect that, the prosecutor and the judge, let them know in no uncertain terms, you two guys get together, that's conspiracy. And so we lay it out in this paper, and if they do get together, then now they're really in trouble. Now you go for more U.S. codes. There are two U.S. codes you can sue on, one criminal and one civil, if it's just the judge. But if the prosecutor gets involved, now you've got conspiracy. If there's a cop involved, for sure you got conspiracy between the cop and the judge, because the court sent the cops out into the streets looking for their victims and then drags them off of the highways, kidnaps them, brings them before the justice, and the justice under the color of law goes through this whole process telling you that you broke the law and you either got to give him money or you got to go to jail, and the whole thing is criminal. And we have to start thinking of it from those terms. These are criminal activities. Nowhere in our Constitution have we ever given the authority to any legislators to write legislation to control our behavior. We've given them authority to control the behavior of bureaucrats, elected individuals, municipalities, towns, and so on. We've given them a minimum amount of authority to make things to control commercial activity between the states to make it flow through. To make it normal, to prevent any restrictions. But they've taken even that to the extreme, but that's another subject. All right, so anyway, real quick, we first thing we start off in here is we give a basic beginning, which I had read, where we move the court to dismiss, to quash it. We then cover what's called judicial cognizance. And in judicial cognizance, it's a counterplate that moves the court to take judicial notice of or knowledge upon which a judge is bound to act without having it proven in evidence. And that's the key thing you want to make to the attention of the judge. He doesn't have the authority to do anything he's doing concerning you. None whatsoever. The only authority he has is to dismiss the case and throw it out. That's the only authority he has. And what this is saying, to take judicial notice, that they must respond and accept certain things. They're bound to act in a certain way without it being proved to them. And what they're bound to act to is what's called case law. And so what their bosses, the Supreme Court on the appellate level and the Court of Appeals level, those Supreme Courts, they have made certain statements about these particular town courts, and they must obey these. And I'm just going to read a few of them. For instance, let's see. Here's one. Jurisdiction must be documented. It must be shown and proved to lawfully exist before a cause may lawfully proceed in the court. And that's a case, a U.S. case, Stuck versus Medical Examiners. And there's quite a few cases that make this particular point. There must be about 10 of them that we write up right here in this paper. And so he's got to believe that. He's got to act upon that. And it doesn't have to be proven to him. Okay. And if he can't find that he has authority, and the authority must come from the people, the authority must come from the Constitution, and it doesn't exist. So he'll never find it. The other thing is that statutes are not laws. These Nisi Prius courts, they rely on the statutes to seek control over the people and to bring them under their jurisdiction. But here's a couple of cases here. This is Rodriguez versus Ray, another U.S. Supreme Court ruling. And by the way, U.S. Supreme Court rulings trump state rulings. So when a state court has a case law that says one thing, and the U.S. Supreme Court says another thing, the U.S. Supreme Court trumps the state court. So these are U.S. Supreme Court rulings. And by the way, the court case that these guys use here in New York, I believe, is a New York case. I'll confirm that next week. But anyway, here's one. All rules, regulations are for government authorities only, not the human creators of it. In accordance with God's laws, all codes, rules, and regulations are unconstitutional and lacking due process. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court says. So they're not for the people. They're for the government. Here's another one. This is Self versus Ray. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, the rules, the regulations, the policies, and the statutes are not the law. It's pretend law. It's law as long as you accept it. But it's fiction. It's pretend law, and you'll go to pretend jail with pretend bars, and you won't be able to leave that area because they'll feel real. Let's see. Here's another one. This is Mulberry versus Madison, and this is a very popular case. As a matter of fact, this particular case, it's just full of nuggets. I've got a lot of quotes from Mulberry versus Madison. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. And let's jump into jurisdiction here. Here's a couple of case rulings out of jurisdiction. And again, this is case law. Okay, judges must obey it. They don't have a choice. These are the guys that's interpreting what the real law really is, and they have to obey it. Once you give them notice, judicial notice, to take judicial cognizance of this, they have to obey it. And every time, and every day that they resist is money in your pocket, every day. Because remember, at the end of this thing, you want to take them into the federal courts and sue them. At some point, if it goes on too long, you want to sue them while you're in their court, because you got to stop it. But in any event, here's some more. Let's see. This is Hagen versus Levine. The law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on a record of the administrative agency and all administrative proceedings, and it doesn't appear there. No sanction can be imposed absent proof of jurisdiction, and they cannot prove it. That's Standard versus Olson. Let's see. Maybe we'll read a couple more, then we'll open the mics up. Without an injured party, no court has the authority over a sovereign. Now remember, you're a sovereign. That's the main part of this whole thing. You're one of the people. And to really understand this, you got to realize, just look at the Constitution. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. You see, the people are the ordainers. They're the one that has established it and then ordained it. And only kings ordain. And that's the key to this whole point. That's the real, focus of our heritage. That's the real American experiment, is can everyone be a king and live in a society? And that's what America is. Everyone is a king. Kings without subjects. That's what we are. We're only to rule ourselves, and therefore no one else can rule us. The guy next door or down the street, they can't rule over us, and we can't rule over them. And certainly government cannot rule over us. They cannot come in and legislate our behavior, because then they are ruling over you. And as long as you accept that, then you'll be a slave. As soon as you start rejecting and pushing back, denying the jurisdiction, arguing, you will win. It's an uphill battle. But once you win once in your town, every time you walk in that town, you're going to rule, because they're going to back away. Every judge in that town is going to leave you alone. And once you win in your county, you know, and it keeps moving out. And if we're all doing it in our towns and our counties, then New York will become free quite quickly. But we all have to get up and we have to do these things. But in any event, here's one. Sovereignty itself, the people, is of course not subject to the law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom, for whom, all government exists and acts. And the law is defined and the law is the definition and limitation of power. For the very idea that man may be compelled to hold his life on the means of living or any material right essential to the enjoyment of life at the mere will of another seems to be intolerable in any country where freedom prevails, as being the essence of slavery itself. So we, the people, answer to nobody but ourselves and our God. As long as you don't injure another human being, damage another person's property, then they can't touch you, and they don't have a right to touch you. You're free to do as you please. But with freedom comes a lot of responsibility. So the case cannot proceed one step further. It must be dismissed when it's challenged. We have plenty of court decisions on that. Let's see, this is Fontenot versus the state. Where the court is without jurisdiction, it has no authority to do anything other than to dismiss the case. So they cannot proceed any further. Here's another one. This is Higgins versus Levine. Did I read this one? This may be just a different statement. When challenged, jurisdiction must be documented, shown, and proven to lawfully exist before they can proceed any further. Immunity is lost once the judge acts without jurisdiction. Once you have served notice that he doesn't have jurisdiction, and he continues after, and you've made it clear, it doesn't matter that he understands it or he doesn't understand it. That's totally irrelevant. He is now guilty of treason. Why is he guilty of treason? Because he has just laid hand on the king. Every one of us is a king, and we have to realize that. we all have the same rights as a king. And once a judge, under the color of law, without jurisdiction, lays their hands on the king, that is treason. As a matter of fact, it's defined as high treason. So he's guilty of high treason, and you can chase him after U.S. codes. There's U.S. Code 18 and 42. And once he's working with the cop and he's working with the prosecutor, you have three people now. Now you have a really strong conspiracy, and you have more U.S. codes under the same numbers that you could apply on them. And again, now you could start mounting up all of their belongings because you can take it away from them. So immunity is lost if they go and pursue without jurisdiction. That includes the cop and the prosecutor, by the way, because they're all officers of the court. We put a warning in here that it's unlawful for town court practices where they come in for the prosecutors to come in and work with the judge. So we give them a warning in here in this paper. And then we give them the wherefore and the bottom line that they have no other choice but to discharge this case for lack of personam jurisdiction. Now, it might take him one or two sessions before he finally throws the case out. Sometimes you get some hardcore, stubborn judges. And it may be a lot of our error that we didn't know all of these things up front, and we learned a lot. But now we know all of the games they play. They get the prosecutors to write the papers. We stop that. They come out and they work together with the prosecutor and they conspire behind the scenes. We stop that. Okay. We get the judge will give the prosecutor the right to respond to our papers. We stop that because he doesn't have the right. There's no court case going. The judge doesn't have jurisdiction. He's got to prove it and show that he's got it. He's barred because he can't, and that's the end of the story. So again, we'll get this paper up top on our page, and we'll get the instructions with it. We also will get the written the video that's up there. Someone wrote it up, all the words, the dialogue in it. So we got the dialogue written up, and we'll put that up there too. All right, with that, let me open up the mics. I'm going to unmute everyone. Okay, everybody's unmuted. If anybody got a question, a comment, or anything to share, mics are open.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
You heard of Ticket Slayer?
I'm sorry?
You heard of Ticket Slayer?
Yeah, I know Ticket Slayer. Yeah.
So you're going to call your product Judge Slayer.
Oh, okay. Let's keep that a secret. That was Gerard talking. It wasn't me. Just for a minute. All right, anyway, anybody else?
To remind Gerard, that was Carl. don't be throwing me under the bus. I see that a judge struck down Bloomberg's big drink thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, on some kind of grounds.
Yeah, he probably won't have a job too long. They'll get rid of him pretty soon. New York judges are really, really bad. I wouldn't want to go under a New York City judge anywhere in those five boroughs, I tell you. But you did get a guy that told the mayor to go to hell, and God bless him. And but they'll still arrest people, just like the guns. You know, there's what was it? Was that in Washington, that case with the guns, Gerard?
What's that?
Even in New York City, people have a right to carry a gun in the cities?
It was Washington, D.C. I think it was in Chicago. Chicago, Washington. It was a couple of different court rulings that said that they can't just across the board outlaw guns. In New York City,
Ouch. Go ahead. New York City.
Well, New York City gun law violates that, just as Washington, D.C.'s does also.
Right. In New York City, it's an automatic 2 years in jail, I believe. Someone's making a lot of noise. Is that you, Gerard?
That's me. Not me.
It's not you. Okay. Anyway, careful with the mics. We're getting some backfeed here. But, yeah, in New York City, it's an automatic 2 years. It does need to be challenged, and hopefully we'll challenge it soon. But we can challenge it with smaller laws, you know, that they try to apply. This soda law is a real dumb one. I mean, you could sue everyone in that one. But in any event, mic's open.
Hey, John, this is Chris.
How you doing, Chris?
Hey, I got a question about the gun rights lawsuit.
Yes.
I was picking my way through all the text of the document that was filed, and
nice.
I think I remember in an earlier version we were considering keeping one of the wherefores at the end had this part about keeping background checks in place to prevent sales to people with a history of violent crime or to people with mental illness.
We dumped the mental illness part.
What's that?
We dumped the mental illness part because violent crimes is sufficient, but go ahead.
Right, that was my question. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss it somewhere. And
right.
I'm not even going to say that I disagree with it. I think liberty is for everyone as long as they're not a convicted felon that's
right.
Serving a sentence.
And if they got a violent background and it's criminal activity, even though they may not be held accountable, they'll be on the list and they won't get it. But if we allow anything, this was discussed, a number of people brought this up, that if, you know, the government loves to make everybody crazy. I mean, you know, they call everybody either terrorist or they're crazy or whatever.
That's
you know,
the danger.
A whole list of people. Huh?
That's the danger.
Right. That's why we got rid of it.
Right. Okay,
and,
good.
And the paper, you know, and again, once we move and get the law corrected, you know, how long does a violent crime stay on your record? I mean, if you're guilty of something, a violent crime, when you're a teenager or in your early 20s, and today you're 60 years old, and since then nothing has come up, and you've got a job or whatever it is in life as well, you know, that the legislators, we got to discuss that, and the legislators have to figure out some law concerning that, because, you know, there's got at some point it's got to fall off, I'd imagine. I don't know. That's for people to discuss. I don't have the answer to that.
Let me make the following situation. Tax crimes are would prevent you from getting a gun.
Right, but that's not violent.
But how do you say violent?
And the passport, by the way.
Well, violent is violent. A violent action is when you use force against somebody. The fact that you are not paying taxes is not a violent crime. It's not even a crime to begin with anyway.
And it has no corpus delicti either.
What does that mean?
What's corpus
delicti? No injured party.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I didn't know that.
You know, this, I brought that point up to John. It's like, well, couldn't a taxpayer claim he's injured because you're not paying your fair share? And John said, well,
no such thing as a fair share.
Get the people. You make sure that, you know, you get people involved, not citizens. You know, they understand their rights, not these people who,
right.
You know, there is no such thing as fair share. And you can't, with tax, if you have a tax bill on you, I don't think you can get a passport. Or I don't know if that legislation went through.
No.
But it doesn't apply to people.
No, I hear you. Did you hear about that, Chris?
That was Ken talking.
Wait, which part? Did I hear about which part?
Well, whoever was talking,
that was Ken.
You can't get a passport if you owe the IRS money.
Ken,
have
you heard that?
Yeah, that's not true. I still
not
have
true?
Mine.
Okay.
I actually don't think they fill out the paperwork for the quote crime. I think it's in limbo. I mean, they don't do anything like you would suspect. They don't take your passport. I don't think you're recorded, huh?
I think it was a bill. It just hasn't passed because it wasn't that long ago that I remember this topic being discussed in the Senate.
Well, even if it passed, it would only be for a federal employee anyway.
Well, if you get into the nitty-gritty, we know that, but, you know, it's... Obviously, it's hard to beat the system when you when everyone's against you. No one else realizes.
Right, but with our paper, what we have as far as the gun is concerned, and we have a lot of suing to do to make things correct here in New York State. But so we're starting off here. We've got this gun law thing. And so the only thing attached is violent crimes. You know, the legislators have to discuss things, and of course they're going to take their cue from the committeeman. Hopefully we'll take control of the committeeman process sometime soon, and then we can kind of lay out the guidelines of what the Constitution says. You know, anybody who wrote a bad check, the IRS claims you owe money, bill collectors, whatever, you know, none of that is a crime that would deter you from getting a gun. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. So it's got to be a violent crime, and that's it. You know, but again, we'll have to detail that better. You know, they do have, of course, you know, when you get stopped by a cop, they run you. They'll run your license plate, and when they get your license, they'll run your license because you may not even be the owner of that car, and they know everything about you, whether you have a record, whether you're violent, whether you're wanted for something or whatever, and they do that quite quickly. You know, you're only on the side of the road a minute or two, and they run you. So they should be able to do that in any gun store, tap into any computer, and getting access to their records and just run a name to see if there's a want on, you know, if there's a problem with that person. If there's not, they make the gun sale. And the government should not, maybe with something we should add in there, make sure that the government should not be collecting this information. Well, that law already exists anyway. They're not supposed to be collecting information. But then you have the Patriot Act and some other things that maybe they allow themselves, and they think that we're citizens when we're really people. So we may want to make that a little clearer in there. Don't collect information on us, because if we find out, then someone's going to get sued. Anybody else? Mic is open. You know, next week I think we're going to talk about that case, Stump versus Spark. I think we're going to try to make a case and make it clear that it's not possible for them to use that case in order to try to get immunity. But if we don't do that case next week, then, you know, I know this week we were going to do an anatomy of a court case, but that's coming up soon, either next week or the week after. But I'd like to get onto this Stump case because I think it's time. Now, you know, we're also getting ready to file another lawsuit concerning the sheriffs. We have a serious problem in New York with the sheriffs. We've lost sheriffs in 7 counties, and nothing recent, but they've been lost in 7 counties. And with this new SAFE Act, they've showed their cards. They're trying to take away a lot of the authority of the sheriffs. They're trying to push the control of the guns over to the state police, which is controlled by one individual. He's called the superintendent of police. And the one that's in place right now has already said that if the governor tells him to confiscate guns, he has no problems with that. So he's got a minion right there, and the governor gets to appoint that person, so the governor will always have their minion there to take the guns away from the people without even going through a legislation. The order goes out, that's it, take the guns. And they're going to try that. That's why they're moving the SAFE Act to the way they're moving it, and they're trying to get this stuff in. They're also trying to minimize the sheriff. They got rid of the sheriffs in Delaware just last year.
Yeah.
I know that there is a sheriff down there that has taken that to court. God bless him. We should try to get in touch with that guy.
You know who, by the way, do you know who the DA is?
Yes, he's, what's his name, son, the vice president.
Biden.
Biden, yes.
I think his name is Bo Biden or something.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, the DA, the attorney general, that's the office that the job of the sheriff moved over to. So you got a lawyer. Okay, I think the DA is appointed by the governor, isn't he?
Or by the bar, who knows, same thing.
Well, definitely has to be bar approved, there's no doubt about that. But, yeah, I think he's appointed by the governor, It's a political position. It's the position that Cuomo had before he became governor, by the way.
What are you talking about? A district attorney of a county or the...
The attorney general. I mean, not the district. The attorney general.
You mean the attorney general.
The
right.
attorney general of the state of Delaware has taken control of the responsibilities of the sheriff and has been given deputies. So you have a lawyer who's a political animal controlled by the governor, who turns out to be the son of the vice president in control of the sheriff's job. Isn't that interesting?
We got some serious problems
coming down the pike.
You have these scumbags, pedophile bastards involved with this. Because that's what Biden is. He's a pedophile monster.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of those stories. So. But in any event, that means we're in jeopardy here in New York because the SAFE Act showed us that. And that means also there's got to be more legislation ready to come out at midnight some weekend to try to get rid of our sheriffs. And that's why we need to get ahead of this game. We need to launch a lawsuit against the 7 counties that do not have sheriffs right now that are elected. And we need to also put into that lawsuit the requirement of the protection of the sheriff, that he is the top cop. And we've got the big court ruling back in the late 90s that Sheriff Mack was involved with, right on the top U.S. Supreme Court. And so we've got a lot of ammunition. Also, it turns out that in New York State, right in our Constitution, it clearly says, I don't remember what article, I seem to think it's Article 4. I don't remember, I'll have to look it up. But right in the New York State Constitution, it says that the sheriff, the county sheriff, and the county clerk shall be elected every 3 to 6 years, according to the legislators. So the legislators get to decide whether it's 3 years, 4 years, or 6 years. Okay, but they must be elected. They shall be elected. And so it's a constitutional violation, so it should be an easy win. So. Another thing is you got Connecticut doesn't have sheriffs, and I think they lost their sheriffs because I think they got rid of counties in Connecticut. And Alaska doesn't have sheriffs, I think because Alaska never had counties. I think they came into the union in 1958, if I recall.
Pennsylvania doesn't have sheriffs. All they do is serve papers.
I have not heard that. I have to look into that. I have not heard that. That's interesting, too. But in Connecticut, I went and looked up the Connecticut Constitution, and the Connecticut Constitution says that the sheriff shall be elected. So you have another constitutional problem. The problem with Connecticut is, you know, I from New York cannot sue on behalf of Connecticut. You have to get people in Connecticut doing what we're doing, and we'd be happy to help them.
You can do it in federal court.
No, you can't sue a state from another state. That's clear. That's U.S. court decision, huh?
You can get into another state by diversity of citizenship.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, I think I saw it in, I think it's in the Constitution that I saw it, that they use the word citizen, because remember back then when the word citizen was used, they meant people, they didn't mean slave, but they said a citizen from another state cannot sue another state.
Right.
Now, is there a way to get around that? Maybe. I don't know. But it'd be much better off if you had a group of people in Connecticut that would pick up and do what we're doing, and we would assist them and help them to do their lawsuit. You know, they need to do it. The people need to do it.
You know those pamphlets I sent you?
Yes. Oh, thanks, by the way. Yes.
They're in there.
Oh, okay. I'll take a look.
The whole thing's in there. And it starts on diversity of citizenship.
Okay. All right, so you're familiar with this?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take a look and see what we can find. So, anyway, anybody else out there, we got a question or a comment, the mic is open. Or, you know, we could change subjects. By the way, we're starting to tour the state again to give presentations. The presentation is on power, spiritual power, political power, and judicial power. And without those three powers, you have nothing. You can't lack in any of them. You have to have all three to have the power. And right now, all of those powers have been robbed from the people. The Bar Association has total control of the judicial power. The parties have total control of the political power, and the government has total control of the spiritual power from the standpoint that they have educated us and made us to believe and to think that when we go to God, we've got to go find a priest. When we go to get justice, we have to go find a lawyer. And to go and have a political power, you have to go find a party. And therefore, you're giving it all away. Every time you go, you're going as an imbecile. You're going as a moron because we don't have any control of that. We've given it up to all these people. And this is what is made. This is what makes a man. This is what makes us a people, is those powers. We must have those powers. So we have to take those powers back. And that's what we're planning to do. And that's what we need people to get involved in. Anyway, anybody else?
Hey,
yeah.
Getting people involved, I mean, now that you're awaken them through these rallies. What's your website? Are you seeing more traffic? I mean, is there any more awakeness going on?
Well, we've been getting some big hits on the website certain days. Usually when we're out there making activity happen and or involved in whatever activity is going on, and we find in those days we get a lot of hits. We probably get about 40 hits a day. And sometimes we go almost up to 200 hits. The duration on the site has been pretty good. People have been staying reasonably long. I think the average is like 3 minutes, which is pretty good. So some people are spending a long amount of time. Some people are just breezing through quickly. But, you know, that's the way it works out. Our ranking has gone to, in the States here, is it the States? Worldwide, our ranking is pretty good. It's below 700,000, which is pretty good on the rankings. But we've been moving down. We've been moving constantly. The site is getting stronger and stronger. We're getting more and more people consistently. We're edging up, so we have a nice, good, steady growth, and it's happening. But you know, sometimes I get a call out of the blue, I'll get an email out of the blue, and I'll discover someone's been reading the site. They've been camping out and really getting involved. You don't know who or what or how much, but every once in a while you get to talk to somebody that you discover they've been spending some time and has gotten involved. They just haven't told me, and I don't need to know everything. You know, people just need to get involved. And that's what we're going to try to do with this new tour we're going to start moving on. We haven't got the dates yet, but we've been asked to come down to Staten Island. We're going up into Greene County and Columbia County. Greene County, I think we're doing tomorrow. Columbia County next week. We'll start posting these things. And what we found is that we have a lot of new blood. All these people that are worried about losing their guns are being awakened, and they're coming in. And it's like when the Tea Party began, everybody was anxious, looking for something to do. They're coming in. And so we got to grab hold of that energy and harness it and give it a focus and a direction. And we have the right vehicle to put them into right now. And this vehicle is power. You know, the Tea Party, I think, has gone insane, if I might say that, because, you see, I've heard for quite some time The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And the Tea Party has not changed in 4 years. It's doing the same thing over and over again, and you can't get their attention. Now, you can attribute that maybe to fatigue, frustration, a lot of people falling back to sleep. I mean, they're not really falling asleep, but they're falling back into complacency, you know. And so we have a lot of new fresh blood, and it's huge, you know. We had two meetings recently, one up in Greene County, and we must have had close to 200 people. I don't know, Gerard, do we have a count up there on Greene County on that meeting? And we had one up in Columbia County, huh?
Yeah, it was like 200 people. It was actually over 200 in Greene County, and I heard that Columbia was also around 200.
Yeah, that's what I would say, too. They were about, I think Greene County was a little more. But definitely they're both about 200.
I think it was close to 250 in Greene County, believe it or not.
Right. So we're talking of, yeah.
Of course, I wanted to bring something else up when you're done far as the sheriff thing, which seems to be igniting. Glenn Beck was on today saying that the sheriff is the last hope. You have to support the sheriff because he only answers to the people. Everything we already know about the sheriff. Glenn Beck is on his radio program in the third hour today, and he says, you know, if you have a lousy sheriff, let us know, and we'll help get him out of office. He said, if you're a sheriff and they're trying to vilify you for standing us, let us know, and we will support you. He said, you call the Blaze, and they'll put it on the air. This is our chance to really use
Well, let's
those
look into
resources.
That and see how we can use that.
Yeah, and so that's very important. And, you know, the sheriffs, some of them are afraid to speak out. I mean, they philosophically believe with us, but they also, you know, it's their job and they don't want to lose their job. And, you know, they're afraid that they won't get the support. So it's important for us to support them because basically where we're at is ultimately it's nullification. You know, I mean, we may get successful with the lawsuit, but I read a book that gave me a little new perspective. They said, you know, when it comes to, I mean, maybe we'll have luck on the state level, but on the national level with Obama, he has no intentions of laying down at all, no matter what. So even if the Supreme Court turns around and nullifies and says unconstitutional his health care bill or his gun bill that he plans on coming out with, he has no intentions of laying down because he put all these executive orders in that he believes that he can do anything, and he is going to do anything because he's already set it all up. He has the infrastructure set up, and he's just going to use – he doesn't care what the Supreme Court says. He doesn't care what Congress says. What's that?
He's the best that money can
buy. He's a dictator.
He's
definitely going to use those things that have been put in place, and there's no going back with them now. They have too many people waking up, so all they're going to do is move forward. This thing is going to come to a head ultimately. And one of the other perspectives that you have to watch, too, is – you know, we're going into the courts, but we're doing it in a different manner because we're going in under common law, and we're going in a court of record. And so, therefore, we're not going to be depending on the judges make the decisions when we get our court of record through. This particular book that I read, they believe that you're not going to get a higher court judge to rule for you, that they're already locked down on these big issues, which may or may not be true. I know John, you know, has hopes that there's a good one there, but you know, you need more than a good one. You need a panel of good ones because, you know, there's three in the appellate court. Actually, there's four. There's three and one alternate. And then when you get up into the appeals court, it's like seven, I think, or nine even.
Well, look at the win that Sheriff Mack got. That proves there's a good judge out there. Of course, they killed her.
That was 1979. That was a long time ago.
Well, again, No, it wasn't 70. It was in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 97. I got dyslexia.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, so that's 12, 15 years ago. But look at
there'll always
be a Ron Paul or someone getting into the system somewhere. And now, you see, this is where it rests on God. If God wants this to happen, it's going to happen. If it's not part of his plan, it's not part of his plan.
I think it rests on the people. I think the people have to...
God can move Pharaoh.
That's true, but, you know...
Well, the people have to turn to him, there's no doubt.
Listen, who was it that was shot? What was the name of the judge that was shot with Gifford? You never even heard his name.
Well, yeah, that was the original judge that ruled for Mack, and he also ruled for... They took him out,
and that sent a message to all the other judges, like, go ahead, make my day. Go ahead and rule for these Tea Party people, and we'll take you out. We'll even shoot a senator or a congresswoman in between so that your name will not even be mentioned. See, they didn't even mention his name. You didn't hear anything about that judge. That was a hit on that judge, and that told all those other judges.
Yeah,
you
that's something I'm reading about. In all seriousness, Obama's hiring these hit squads.
The Brown Church.
And they're taking people left and right.
Yeah, they said that they could, so now they got a list of who can be killed. Probably John's on it, but anyway.
Gerard's on it.
You guys, you know what? You wish you can get out so easy. Sorry, God's putting you here for a reason. You're in it for the long haul.
We're going to suffer. Yeah, I know. I'm going to get hit with one of them drones, and I'm going to take half of me away. I'm going to have to walk around with a cauterized half a body. Anyway, one of the things they said to beware of is the other side is the side that's doing this. This New World Order side is very patient and very unflappable, and they use adversary to their advantage. For instance, you know, they came out with the same sex marriage bill. I just use that for an example because California came out with a thing against it, right? So right away, all us good people, we run in and we say, oh, we got to protect marriage. We're going to put in the Marriage Protection Act, right? So it goes through and they put the Marriage Protection Act. Guess what? They just won. You know why? Because you didn't need an act to preserve marriage. It's already in the Constitution.
Well, it's a contract portion of law. That's all.
Well, what I'm saying is, and they do this with other stuff, the minute you codify a right, you just took it from being a right into a privilege.
Yeah.
Because then they can take it away. So, you know, you run out and you make these new laws to protect a right that you already have. You don't need another law. It's the Constitution is there. The Bill of Rights is there. We don't, you know, when they get a what looks like a victory, then we go out and make a law that looks like the opposite of that victory. Really, they're winning, and they're distracting us, and it's not necessary. It's up to the people to say no. That, we're not gonna do that, and we're not gonna abide by that, you know. And if the people stuck together, you know, their thing is to divide and conquer, and that's what they do, you know. And so we have to be careful that we're not playing into their hands, you know. I mean, they like to give us places to go and things to do where we feel like we're accomplishing something. In the meantime, their agenda is still rolling forward, you know. So we have to take them out of office, and we have to stand up with a show of solidarity amongst ourselves. You know, they got everybody bullcrapped into believing that we're just a noisy minority and we'll go away, and really most of the people are for them, and that's a lie. And even if we are a noisy minority, well, that's what they did to take us over. They're the noisy minority that brought us to this place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we could be the noisy minority that takes it back because, listen, they're not even 3% of us, really, I don't believe. I mean, there's a bunch of people out there that are asleep, but they can give a crap less. As long as they get their beer and football, they don't want to know anything.
Right.
You know, and that's a big portion of society. You know, the guys that are working to undermine us, you know, they are really a small force. You know, they're not a big percentage of the people out there, you know, and they've spent so many years dumbing people down and dumbing the schools down. And now you got a bunch of dumbed down people out there. And the ones that can think have been brainwashed, and you don't have too many free thinkers. And the problem with that is they have to operate this new world order system with the, with the, people that they created. And so there's what you find is at all levels of government, you find all this incompetence that goes on. I mean, when we went in the court system, my goodness, I never saw such a bunch of incompetent. And I'm not even talking about the judges, because I had a pretty good judge. I'm talking about the lawyers for the other side. You know, they don't know procedure. They don't know law. There was actually one point where I was embarrassed for the other side, because they were just so totally unprepared and unprofessional.
You know, there was
go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. Finish.
Oh, I'm done.
Oh, are you? I just want to point out one thing that really amazed me. There's a movie star that had he got a divorce, and he had a trial for the custody trial, and it had a jury. Now, has anybody ever heard of a jury trial for a child custody litigation? I haven't.
Yeah,
He did, because he went with the common law. He had a common law jurisdiction and a common law case, and he won.
Yeah, they never give you a jury trial on that stuff.
No,
I mean we did get out of the family court by challenging what they said and suing in the Supreme Court, taking it out of their jurisdiction. And of course, they didn't like that. They got rid of us real quick, because they don't want to show people that they don't have the authority over people.
Right.
Yeah, one of the things about the courts, though, is that, you see, we have U.S. codes. We have a lot of powerful decisions. Case law. I mean, we got everything on our side. We really do. The problem is we don't have the judges. But we also have the judges that fear. Once they realize that we're not pushovers, as they start to see us develop, and believe me, we've got a lot of cases, and we're hitting some hardcore stuff that they can't even imagine is possible, yet we make a case that's so logical and obvious, it's hard for them to rule against. And I'm talking about lots of cases. We have a tax case. I think we have an IRS case that if we're able to push the court of record through, it's going to be super powerful. We have the case against the New York State Board of Election from 2011 and 2012. We're up before the courts with a writ of mandamus, which they haven't seen in 70 years, and they have no clue what to do with that. We write papers that the lawyers on the other side can't even respond to, but we threaten all the time. We let them know we accept the oaths and the bonds of all the officers of this court, okay, which includes the bailiff and includes the judge and includes anybody else that's an officer of the court. And what I found out recently, I'm totally blown away by this, is that, and I don't know how they could do it, because if there ever was an oxymoron, this is it. Lawyers actually take an oath to defend the Constitution. Can you believe that? When they become a lawyer and they get their registry. I just was beyond myself. I mean, we got to sue all these lawyers because they none of them represent the Constitution. But here's the thing. We have all these U.S. codes and all these court rulings, and this is what perplexes the courts, because you go in to talk to a judge, especially let's take the town court level. You go into these judges and you tell them, hey, you ain't got the authority. You can't do nothing to me. You're stuck. Now, they've been taught that they have to get you to plead, and they can't move till they plead. Now they start to think about, why is that? Because you're now challenging the court. It forces them to think, why are they being told that? And then they read your paperwork, and they say, whoa, look at that stuff. That's, you know, they got to understand it. I mean, words are words. You know, you can't do this and you can't do that. Unless you can do this, you can't do that. I mean, words are words. What is it? This is their boss. And we're coming in with their boss's words, and they don't know what to do. And they're being badgered by the prosecutor, who's the lawyer, who's not going to allow any of this stuff in because he's a practicer of statutes. But the bottom line is the fear of the code. Once they realize, they all think they got immunity. And it's when you get into that argument. We're going to write a real good case on that, so we're going to put it in every single one of our cases. You don't have immunity, and here's why. And we'll give them the memorandum. And all we have to do is win the court case once. We could show lots of cases throughout the country where judges have gotten sued. Very hard to do in New York because of that one New York court case, which was back in 76 or 79. But we're going to topple that one. I believe that. It's going to be real, in my opinion, it's real easy. Almost impossible for a lawyer to do, but for the layman, the people, the real people who are coming in with the real law, it's a piece of cake, in my opinion. I really believe that. But the bottom line is once you make the point, you're going to hold them accountable. And every time they screw up, you say, okay, fine, you're on the list, and you add them into the game. You know, we're suing a couple of people in the county of Greene on behalf of a 76-year-old woman, widow, who's been thrown out into the street, so to speak, who's lived her whole life. They've taken her empire, a multi-million-dollar piece of property away for taxes. I mean, what do they expect, okay, for the person who's in their 70s? And they just take the property away. Well, we went after them because they took it as if she was a pirate, because that's exactly the rules they use against her. And then when we got resistance from the judge, okay, fine, we added him into the list. Okay, now we're suing the judge. You see, we're suing everyone along the way. We pull them into the game. And once they realize that you're going to sue everybody, and once we get through one case where the judge doesn't have a choice and he's going to be sued and he's going to lose something, now they're going to start to worry. Because that's when the U.S. codes are really going to take play into the fear of their conscience. They're going to realize what these really mean and what they're facing. They're facing 10 years in jail every time a conspiracy comes up that violates your unalienable right. Every single time they can face up to 10 years in jail plus unlimited lawsuit in a civil case. So that's the fear, and that's the leverage that we may have, because when you get an appellate court, okay, that now has to rule, and they know the right way to go, but they're ruling status quo, but then they realize who they're dealing with because they're seeing the track record of what we're doing, and they're saying, whoa, they gave me the same thing. They quoted U.S. codes in this case right at me. We have done that at the appellate court. They have accepted the oaths and the bonds of the officers of this court, of the appellate court. We've done that too. So they must realize at some point when they actually read the papers that we intend on adding them to the list of all these other criminals, because they're criminals too if they come out after the king, because the people are the king, and they have unalienable rights. They cannot be touched by an officer of a court. They can't be touched by any government agents. There's no legislator that can legislate that away, and they're all guilty of high treason once they violate that. So with that in mind, and the fear that they don't know what the next court's going to do, because you've got the Court of Appeals above them, then you've got at least two, maybe three courts in the federal level, and each one doesn't know what the next one's going to do. So that's a pressure that God may use to make them do the right thing. You know, just like Pharaoh, he hardened Pharaoh's heart. He made him do what he wanted to do, and then he took it all out from him. You know, so God could make any of this happen. And so I have faith that it could work this way for us. There's got to be a reason why we're here.
It's exactly the fear they beat into us for taxes.
That's right. That's right. When people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fears the people, now you have liberty. And that's what we're applying. We're bringing in liberty, okay? And we want these judges to fear. And all we have to do is, let me tell you, we have the potential of taking by just brute numbers with this new thing with the guns. We have the chance of taking the political process by just bringing in huge numbers of people throughout the state of New York if we plan this correctly. But we also have the ability to take it back with one of these two court cases and probably a third one that will be filed again this spring. So we have that opportunity to take it back there too. And once we take it, in any of these ways we get control of that, then the game is over. That's it. Then now we have control of the political process, and they will be obedient to the party, which will be us, both Democrats and Republicans. So again, there's a lot of hope out there. There's not much time, but it's time to act. We have to get rid of complacencies. We have to stop procrastinating. We have to jump up, move forward, and do what has to be done. We have to stop fearing or saying, I can't do that or I can't understand that. No, you can do it, and you can understand anything if you want to. And that's the attitude we have to breed in the people. So we have a lot of people coming in from the gun level, you know, again, sportsmen and stuff, that they don't want to lose their guns, but they're starting to realize They already know there's a problem in government. They just don't look at it. And now they're taking their guns. They ain't getting my gun. So now they're coming into the system. Now they're rubbing shoulders with people who understand what they're starting to hear the horror stories, and they're starting to worry. So now's the opportunity to grab a hold of those people and give them that direction. And there's the hope right there. If we can pull a couple of hundred people in each county just to come look at the plan, and if we just get half a dozen in every county, but to a dozen, that's enough to take control of each county. And that means we can control the state. So it's not a big leap to control. As Jefferson said, we don't have a government by the majority. We have a government by the majority of those who participate, which is a very, very little minority. This whole country is controlled by a handful of people. And to be put it straight, every state is controlled by two individuals, and that's the state chairman of both of the political parties. They control everything in their state, and they anoint someone in every one of the counties. In New York State, we have 62 counties, so they anoint 62 people in both parties, and that's what controls everything. They control it all, and it all goes up to whoever's on the pinnacle of that movement, which, of course, we know ends up at the New World Order. So they control everything by just a handful of people, okay? We can do what we have to do. We just have to do it. Anybody else have anything?
I have a question. Do you think you'll be bringing your tour down to Nassau County?
Yeah, we're planning on it. We know Judy down there?
Judy Pepinella?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll talk with her. I just spoke with her tonight. And, there's a couple of groups down there. And I got someone just recently, someone from down that way joined our New York Committeeman group. And we do have people from those counties in our New York Committeeman group. We intend on coming down that way. If someone wants to organize it, we'll also help them with some ideas on how to reach out to a lot of these people in these gun clubs, because you're going to pull in a lot of new blood there, and that's what we have to focus in on. We have to pull a lot of new blood in. But, yeah, we're planning to come down there. Anywhere in the state that we're called, we'll start pushing it a little more over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, because I do agree with you about the Tea Party. I belong to a couple of them locally. And it's the people that show up. Okay, we had the storm here, so a lot of people are still out of their homes, but it's just dwindling. And you're absolutely right. We keep doing the same thing, and it's like you go to a meeting and nothing is accomplished.
No, and it's a shame. You know, this happened with the Ron Paul movement, and when Ron Paul lost it in 2008, everybody just went into the woodwork. I mean, the whole thing just collapsed. And people were really frightened. They thought the end was coming, and they also were just so depressed.
That's true. That's true. I don't know which was worse, the storm or the loss of the election.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm going back to 2008 now. This is when it fell apart. And then
in
the beginning of 2009 arose the new Tea Party movement, which really kind of really was sparked off by Glenn Beck, but it really were remnants of those people who were leftover diehards from the Ron Paul movement, I being one of them. And so we got reestablished. That's how it was reestablished in my county. That's how it was reestablished, I happen to know, in Columbia County and Greene County and in numerous other counties. And so, but in any event, now you've got the Tea Party movement, but they're just like burnt out of something. And it's
no, you know what the problem is?
To go on to something new now. So we need fresh blood. Yeah,
you know what the problem is? The Tea Party does not want to talk about anything that requires action. They just sit around and talk. And they pass around the peace pipe. And they use the speakers they usually delegate to speak are lawyers. And
well,
you're right, because we're starting to get the idea that you do need to be more active in your government, which there are about four or five of us in our small Tea Party group that are going to become committeemen in our local party.
Right. Uh-huh. The problem, though, is that they're playing ball with the existing party when they have to overthrow the existing party. And that's the big problem. And we've chased all the Democrats out. We had a lot of Democrats in the Ron Paul movement, and they worked together well. But when the Tea Party came in, I tell you what, I had a lot of Democrats here in Dutchess County. I said, hey, how come you come to the Tea Party? Oh, we're Democrats. So, yeah, well, we want you there. You know, well, nah, I listened to the speakers, and they bashed the Democrats. And in the beginning, the Tea Party did that, the big, big mistake. So they chased a lot of the Democrats away. We've lost the Democrat base there. We do have some, but we've lost a lot of them. But we have to reestablish this. I think we're going to find a lot of Democrats mingled among the gun owners. And they're Democrats by inheritance. Their parents were Democrats, and their parents were Democrats, so they're Democrats, you know. And so we'll get a lot of those people. We'll get a big chunk from there. But again, you know, in little counties like Greene County and Columbia County, if we can pull 250 people to a meeting and they're interested in coming back, goodness, you give them a presentation. And if you could pull 20 or 30 of them, or 10 or 15 of them, into the system to become committee men, forget about it. You take over the system just by sheer numbers in every county. If we can do it with the courts, it doesn't matter. We could do it with just a dozen people throughout the entire state of New York. And we actually have 150 elected committee men right now in the state of New York, and all of them is us. There's not one traitor in either the Democrat or the Republican Party that are elected committee men.
Yeah.
The rest of them are all phonies.
The Tea Party definitely needs some new ideas, some direction. I think that's where they're kind of falling apart. I know locally where I am. I mean, because
I think they'll come on board if we could move the gun people in, and they'd start to come in and take power, and then they see it. I think they'll come in then.
And
you know,
there was a CSA meeting where it was basically on gun issues, and there was, different groups within, and there was about 250, 300 people, and it was a bad night. We were expecting a big storm.
Is that the one in the library out there?
Plainview, yeah.
Yeah, I was out there taking the names for the court case in the front.
Oh, okay. I signed up for that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that's probably how you heard about us here.
No, actually, I get from Liberty Alliance, I always get emails, and I kind of like glance over them. And
right.
But on one of the meetups, I just joined the 912 Project, and on one of the meetups, I saw this phone conference for tonight. And I said, let me dial in and, you know, see to get some ideas and get a little bit more knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to, when I finish, because I just went online, and I'm going to, you know, I will join up to it, become a member. And I was to read some of the, you know, the issues that you have there in the different cases. So
yeah, we have a lot of, you know, we're an education group is what we are. Of course, the meetup group, we use the meetup for the sole purpose of having email communications and to some degree telecommunications, because you can get those text messages for our meetups and meetings and court cases and everything if you sign up for the text messages on our meetup group. But in any event, when you look to our website, which is newyorkcommitteemen.org, we've set that up in such a way to teach you everything we know and everything you need to know concerning the committeemen and how to properly get elected and how to connect with us. We also do the same thing with the judicial process. And we teach people how to, you can go in there and you can learn court access. We teach you how to get into the access of the courts, how the paperwork works and what papers you need and what the makeup of a court case is and how things work. And also we have about 40 or 50 hours of common law course on there. We have history, the real history. We've got a guy named Tom Wood who's given, he's a professor on the Constitution of American history, and we've got a lot of his lectures up there. We have Michael Bodnarik, who's given we've got to have, like, I think his is like, goodness, 12, 14, 15, 16, probably 16 to 18 hours on the Constitution. So we have a constitutional course up, and all of this stuff is in video.
Yeah.
You know, we have about 60 or 80 hours or more maybe of the road to the Continental Congress, where we had the conference out in Washington, D.C. That was all videotaped, and that was on C-SPAN, and we had the symposium out in Washington, D.C. on taxes. We have all the information that took place concerning the getting together of the Continental Congress and the lawsuit for the right for redress of grievances that after 10 years of battle in court was thrown out by the Supreme Court saying they didn't have standing. But of course that was a mistake in the way Schultz put that one together. But probably the pinnacle of Robert Schultz's work, in my opinion, is the Continental Congress work, where he brought together the Third Continental Congress of 2009, and they came out with the Articles of Freedom. I don't know if you're aware of this, but they came out with the Articles of Freedom, and the Articles of Freedom, these people were elected by the people across the United States in 2009, and they met, and they looked at every problem in this country, and they gave a solution. And it's 63 pages called the Articles of Freedom. We have that up on our website also. And it gives the states very specific details on what it is that they need to do, and it also gives the federal government very specific details. And it covers the Second Amendment, by the way. And I'd realized that over the weekend when I was looking at it. I said, wow, you know, let me see what he said about the Second Amendment. And we've got stuff in the Second Amendment right there, the Continental Congress, the elected Continental Congress, which is the people, have told the government with no uncertain terms, get rid of the gun permits, get rid of control. You do not have the power to infringe. And so we failed to put that in our case, but I'm going to write a paper and add that in a memorandum, and that'll stiffen up our case some too. So we've got a lot of great stuff up there. And this is just the beginning of the iceberg of what we have. We have interviews with people. We have a Ron Paul interview that'll blow your mind. It was done back in 1988, and Ron Paul, who had just came out of Congress at that time for his first run, and he retired out of that. And he went back a couple of years later, but he came in and gave the interview and revealed the fact that Congress has no more power. They think they have power, but they have nothing. They're zero. They're zilch. It's all in the presidency's office, and it's been robbed, and people don't even know it. We have an interview with a guy named Norman Dodd, who was done in the early 80s, too, I think, and he died not long after that interview, but he was involved in the Reese Committee back in the 40s and the 50s, and he was the lead investigator, and what he reveals, the conspiracy involved in this country way back then, and the magnitude of it was so great that the woman he originally sent down to do the major part of the investigation down at these trusts, it was the Morgan the trusts. In that investigation, the conspiracy was so huge and so frightening that the woman who he had sent to spearhead to get that information, when she came back after dwelling upon it, went mad. That's how serious and that's how frightened the things that they discovered. And this guy in an interview, of 1 hour interview, what he reveals in 1 hour is just totally amazing. And we have that interview up on our line on New York Commitment. We have, oh goodness, it goes on and on and on. Go to our issues of the day, you know, today's issues page, and just start watching those videos. It'll just blow your mind. But this is what we're dealing with.
Where is that?
Today's issues on newyorkcommitteeman.org.
There you go. Okay.
And, yeah, if you just click on today's issues, I'll tell you a couple of them. You know, we have the sheriff, the last hope. We have the Continental Congress, the route to it. We have information on the Agenda 21. Most people are aware of that, what's going on. The Homeland Security, the problems there. There's a couple of them here that's really, really, well, on the gun page, it's really frightening. But probably one of the most informative videos we have, which is about 2 hours long, I think, that really lays out the seriousness of the problem and how long it's been going on and how it happened. It was done by, it's a documentary done by, what's his name?
Honey Masters?
No. This is called the subversion factor. That's the name of the video. Okay? And it's by Ed... someone help me out with his name. Griffin. Ed Griffin.
Oh, yes.
Okay? Now, Ed Griffin, he's done so many of these documentaries over the years, but he's done what's called the subversion factor. And he shows you exactly how they have taken over our country. And it's been going on for a long, long time. The other one is the power elite. That was the one done with Ron Paul in 1988 and Hidden Agenda with Norman Dodd back in the early 80s, I think it was. It was 82 or something. We also have, like I said, we have America's Last Hope. We have an in-depth look on the sheriff and the power of the sheriff and the work of Sheriff Mack and what he's done. And so many other things. So many other things. A lot of people don't know that they tried to do a violent overtake here of this country back in 1938. Let me think about this. It might have been a little earlier, but it was the White House coup, and they tried to take over the White House, and that was actually led by Prescott Bush. And Prescott Bush is none other than the father, or the supposed father, of President Bush.
Yeah.
Okay. Bush won, first Bush. So,
the originator of the New World Order at his State of the Union address.
Oh, yeah. Our buddy, George Bush. But anyway, we have a lot of stuff out there, and people need they don't need so much to focus in on the conspiracy part, and it's not a theory, but they need to understand the seriousness of it. But they really need to educate themselves on what is liberty. How do you get power? How do we get control of the courts? How do I represent myself and not be, an imbecile? Because that's what you are when you go in with a lawyer. You're an imbecile. And you have no authority to make any decision on your own. That lawyer makes it all for you. And he sells you out as quick as he'll sell they sell their own mother out, to be honest with you. So, but that's what we need to do. We need to learn about power. We need to learn about liberty, freedom, and how we can get it back. And that's we have a lot of that stuff up there.
I'll get in touch with Judy and see if there's any way that I can be of help to her get you folks down here.
Yeah, talk with her. Tell her that our presentation is now on the justice system as much as on the political system. We have a lot of new information to share, and we have a lot of stuff. But what they want to do is they want to tie into whatever gun clubs. There must be gun clubs down there, no?
Yeah,
get the gun clubs. Those people, you get them involved and come to the meeting. That's the fresh blood we need. We really need that.
The other important part of this thing is that we have to concentrate on our local level, because all politics begins at the local level, and that's something that we have more control over, is our local level. Your local judges, your local police force, your local, your community should be your 911 call. You should be getting together with like-minded people and banding together in communities. And I mean, you could even do this in the city, although the trouble with the city is if you make a nice community, you're still surrounded by all the rest of it. So when the crap hits the fan, you got your community there. How long are you going to hold out? That's why a lot of people are taking and doing second homes up in the country. But really, locally, it's much easier on the local level to practice this nullification business. You know what I mean? If your local police force and your local sheriff and all your local officials are against this, and they just don't act, they have the discretion on whether to act or not, it makes it go away. I mean, that's how prohibition went away, because they refused to prosecute it after a while, because juries refused to convict on it.
Right.
Because they judged the law, and you have all these judges telling the juries that you will not judge the law. You're only here to judge whether or not the law was broken. And
even though the New York State Constitution in Article 1, Section 8 clearly says that the jury shall judge both law and fact.
Well, the
that's
trouble
in our New York State
going, they're going in as slaves. That's the problem.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, they're coming in as the people,
I mean,
as the citizens.
Judge telling them is not unconstitutional. It's constitutional. I mean, it's fraud, but it's done through fraud. But basically, the people that are in that court that have been charged with that crime have agreed to be charged with that crime.
But you
yeah,
can,
but
I mean, you can tell them.
They've consented to be under that crime, or you know what I mean, they've given up their rights for privileges and they're bound by those laws. So that's, you know, ultimately that's the reason that they're able to say these things.
No, but they can't override the Constitution. I mean, anybody sitting in there on any for any account has the right to tell them or has the ability to tell them. And
well, they're not supposed to, but they do because they're all criminals and they deceive the people. And again, that's a dilemma, you know, I know I've been thinking about a lot. We need to sue the New York State Supreme Court, and we may have to sue the New York State Appellate Court. And who knows, when we get up to see what goes on up at the Court of Appeals, we may have to sue them too. And, of course, all those lawsuits will have to be done in federal court. But it's a serious consideration because – they are defrauding the people. And if you want to find out how bad they're defrauding the people, come to our first conference because we are laying out a whole new focus on a way of dealing with this problem. And we're going to put that judge on notice. And we do happen to have, I think, I don't know yet, I think he's a reasonable guy that's going to be the judge. I think he's a thinker. And I think we may be able to get the way of the people here with this guy, possibly. But we're going to put him in a box. We're going to frustrate him, and we're going to stump him. And it's going to force him, if he is a thinker, it's going to force him to go home and do some homework and come back and deal with us. And so we're going to do something very unorthodox, something that probably has never been done in New York State before. And I think that's the case anyway. And we'll see what happens. We're going to get bold.
You're going to go in with a baseball bat.
No,
John, are you aware of a governor's conference in 1939, 38 or 39?
Well, I'm aware of the one that Bush set up. He was having a lot of conferences with governors, but no, I wasn't aware of that one. No, is that at the time of the White House coup?
Yeah, what happened? That was FDR's doing. He put the...
Well, the coup, I think, was in 34, now that I think about it. It was a while back. A lot of people don't realize that they had a million-man army, a half a million-man army right out there in Washington, and they got this guy, General Smugley, who was a very impressive individual, been around for a long time, and he was the dirty guy for the... federal government, and he was involved in a lot of wars, and I guess he eventually woke up or something. He got sick of it. I don't know what moved him, but he changed sides. And so when they wanted to do this coup here on Roosevelt, they approached him, and he said, "Oh yeah, I'll do that." And he went along with them, and then he went to Congress and got to speak before Congress. And he revealed the conspiracy, and it was stopped. And as a matter of fact, this whole story comes out of the records of Congress, right off the halls of Congress. It's in the archives. And so he stopped the coup, and then he gave a big speech on war is a racket. War is a racket. It's all about money. And the federal government is the big mafia, and they're just making tons and tons of money. And then, of course, by the time you get up to the late 50s, and you have Eisenhower coming out, and he's warning us of the military-industrial complex, and then you have Kennedy who comes out and warns us, and he says, before I leave office, I got to let the people know that the office of the president has been hijacked and is being used for the destruction of the American way. And 10 days later, he's dead. Okay, So we have some serious problems. Been cooking in this country a long time. They've tried to do coups numerous times. I think the 60s, they tried. It just was, the country wasn't ready yet with all that upheaval with the riots in the streets. They tried it in the 30s. I heard that they tried it even earlier than that, but they tried it in the 30s. Who knows how many times, it just didn't come about. Now they're at it again. I mean, they're just not going to give up.
Do you have contact for Ed? What's his name?
I know Ed. What's his name very well.
The guy that wrote the Jekyll Island.
Ed Griffin.
Do you have a contact with him?
I might have. I have to look around. I'm sure we can probably find one. He's a reachable guy. He's like Robert Schultz. Robert Schultz, if you call his number, he answers the phone. Schultz, yeah.
Okay.
You know?
Because he knows about that conference I'm talking about. And I'd like to have it because I'd like to edit the book and put it in there. That's the conference that the states agreed to collect Social Security, because right now, if you read the statute, there's not any way a state could collect that.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt. Look, the whole thing is fraud. When you go into, look, at the United States, the U.S. Constitution is clear. There's only two courts available in the United States. Now, there are the other courts, the administrative courts that could be done, and they are done, and that's fine. But they've turned those administrative courts into admiralty courts under the name of justice, and there's nothing justice about it. But in any event, the Supreme Court is to be and must be a common law court. That's in our U.S. Constitution. When you get into our New York Constitution, it says the same thing, that all Supreme Courts are courts of record. They are common law court. But the moment you walk into the courtroom, you're met by statutory situation. Everything's statutory. Now, you have a situation, but a lot of people don't know, and we need to bring this up one evening and talk about this, that there's no such thing as a licensed lawyer. It doesn't exist.
No,
That's a facade. And
a membership card.
And I've got enough information now, and I think I might be articulated enough now, or I will be shortly, to deal with that problem in court cases that I'm already running. And I know I'm going to come up against that argument, and we're going to totally destroy them. Because they have no clue what I have to tell them, they'd never even heard before. And it was 1909 when the American Bar Association, the ABA, was incorporated here in this country. I think it was in Chicago, and they became incorporated in 1909. And in 1911, lo and behold, New York State's laws doubled, the statutory laws. And when you go in there, now you see all of these behavioral things that was written in there. You have Section 2 of election law that they wrote in for this committee man. Everything was just a huge conspiracy being worked out to set in place a jail system across the state of New York and the United States, but we're talking about New York alone, a constructive jail system. But we're in jail here in New York. We are the most oppressed people of the entire country. And our rights are severely distorted and walked upon. They have swarms of jail officers swarming the streets, writing tickets all the time, and arresting us for all kinds of different things and violations. And sometimes we get thrown into the hole, to the county jail or something for a year or two, maybe for carrying a gun or something. But we're all in jail, and we just don't realize how severe it really is until you really hit up against these people and say, what the hell are you doing? Leave me alone. I'm free.
They're swarming our agents and eating out our substance.
Exactly, right. Just like
Overhear
the Declaration
that.
Said. Amen.
The different thing about now is this is worldwide. This is happening simultaneously in the whole world. I mean, we watched a video on Australia. The people are waking up, asking them.
Same questions we are.
Yeah, who are you? Who voted for you? Where is your where's your charter? How are you legal? You know what I mean? And they can't answer the questions. But make no mistake about it, this is not going to be two steps forward, one step backwards anymore. There's no one step backwards. They've sprung the trap. It's moving forward. There's a line in the sand this summer, August of 2013, because Obama's health care bill has to be implemented by the churches, as far as, you know, them paying for abortions and other such things that they're definitely against, you know, opposed to their religion. And he basically said you have to comply by August of 2013. That's a big, big line in the sand. So, you know, and he's the week that the Trayvon Smith thing came out, where the guy shot the black kid there, the neighborhood watch. Well, that happened like on a Wednesday. Obama signed a draconian executive order on Friday. They released it Friday at 5 o'clock. The Trayvon thing wasn't released hardly at all, just local news. And then what they did was, on Monday morning, they broke the Trayvon thing hard, because they didn't want anybody discussing the six different orders that he put in, the draconian orders, which is why he doesn't care if we win in the Supreme Court as far as any of what he's doing, because he's already put in these orders that allow him to kill, maim, do whatever he wants at that time. And so technically, all of those religious leaders that say that they will not comply, guess what? They're enemy combatants on this soil. And he can do it. He can take them out however he wants to. He'll go pick them up with his brown shirts or whatever. He wants a civilian force that is as equipped as the American Army. And actually even more so. He's getting rid of something like 80,000 troops, because this civilian force will not have an oath of office. It will not, you know, they're taking kids 14 to 17, and then they're taking 17 to 24.
Where did I hear that one about in the history book?
I hear you, yeah.
Hitler. Yeah, this is all very scary stuff. Very scary stuff. So this is no joke. I think this summer you're gonna see a lot of crap going on. You better be secure in your communities. You better know who your leaders are. You better know who your neighbors are. This whole brown shirt thing, he's gonna teach them to spy on you.
Well,
you know, your own kids.
Let's just hope he wants to hide out in a cave.
Yeah, well.
Well, Thomas Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And what can save us is knowledge. And people have to get knowledge. They have to get understanding of how things really work, and the fraud needs to be revealed. If that happens, if that can happen, and people say, wait a second, hey, forget about it. No. You just got to say no. You don't have the authority. Leave me alone. If enough people get up and do that, the New York State's turn around overnight. And that's where we're at. You see, the New World Order has made us, again, I brought this up earlier, they have made us to become law-abiding citizens. Let me rephrase that, statute-abiding citizens. And so they've trained us to obey what the pretend law. And that law is becoming stricter and stricter. And it never became more realized in my mind than when I went to a gun meeting. I was invited down there to speak to talk about the lawsuit we have and see if we get people signed up. And I spoke to them, and I realized I was speaking over their head, but they did understand the lawsuit. But the bottom line of the whole thing, after I finished and I sat down and I started listening, after I gave them my little speech and talk about law, this pretended law, and then what real law is, and then I'm sitting down and they're debating and talking about how it is that they're going to obey this new law. And it was just insane. These people didn't hear what I had to say. They were deaf to it. And as long as people continue under that kind of an attitude and be good little slaves, we're lost, okay? But it is true, they're waking up, and it takes time for them to wake up, so we have to give them that time, you know? We can't get angry with them, because we were suckers just like them at one time. We didn't know. And when we were waking up, it took a little time, little by little by little, and we're able to digest a little more and a little more and a little more until we start saying, oh, my God, is it this bad? No, it's even worse than that.
We just have to monitor what we put in the nipple.
Yeah, that's all. That's all. And you know what? Just give them the time and bring them along. You know, they know that there's something. Everybody I come in contact knows there's something wrong. I just was at a place with a lot of very simple individuals. People I know for a long, long time, but they're just very simple. They don't know nothing about nothing. They're just happy in their own little world. And I tried to talk to them about a few things, and by the response, they said, ultimately, I know, but I don't want to hear it. So the proverbial ostrich with the head in the sand. But everybody knows there's something seriously wrong here in America.
You have that percentage of people that perceive you as the problem. Because they believe the property
right.
of the
but
of
you don't.
The
you, I don't meet too many of them though. But that's true.
You know why you don't meet them? Because you're not hanging around those areas where the campuses are, where all the monkey butts are. Because that's where they are. These are the beautiful people that think that they need to tell you how to spend your money because you're too stupid to figure it out on your own.
Right.
I guess
there's not too many of them. But go ahead.
I was at a Tea Party meeting, and after the meeting was over, I asked the audience how many people were United States citizens. They all raised their hands.
Yeah, I do that too, and that's what you get a lot of that. But then you got the opportunity to educate them what the difference is between a citizen and a people, you know. And, you know, you can call yourself a citizen, but dare not do it in court because you're in trouble if you do.
Yeah.
So you're going to lose your positioning. And,
well, then So then I asked them what was their company, their country, and they said, United States. I said, no, sorry.
Right. Again, they don't understand that the United States is a nation.
Right.
Yeah. And a nation is not a country.
Right.
And a nation cannot have citizens. And
right.
yet people are U.S. citizens. Go figure that out. That's
well,
how dumbed
know,
down we
that,
are. We're so dumb, it's pathetic. And I speak to myself first, you know. What
clever.
A pathetic... Huh?
Was a clever thing. They got the U.S. citizen in with the slave issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
14th Amendment. And yep. if you read that, if you get to that point when you read that pamphlet, you'll see that the Negroes are not citizens of the states. They do not have
right.
the same immunities we have.
All that was in 1868. All that was the transference of the ownership of the slaves. From the plantation owners to the federal government. That's exactly what happened. Okay,
yeah.
And then they tried to bring the white man and any other colored man into that system, and they wouldn't have it. So they said, okay, that's fine. And it took them another 40 or 50 years before they were able to get certain holes in here. And you have the movement in the early 1900s with the Federal Reserve, the changing, the controlling of the history, the taking over and the controlling of the educational system, two major world wars and a couple of depressions, and so on, and voila, on the other end of this comes out the slave, and they're total believers that they're U.S. citizens, and they're ready to do anything. And that's where we're at. They control our educational system. They control our entertainment system, our TV, our networks, our news media. They control it all. So
yeah.
If you can control what goes into the mind, you're absolutely going to control what's coming out of the mind. And what we are talking about to those people who are true believers, we're insane. We're crazy. Okay.
When you look at that pamphlet, the Supreme Court has came out in clear English said that the white population is not affected by the 14th Amendment, has no impact on the 14th Amendment or from the 14th Amendment. Very powerful.
Well, again, I think once you make this this argument before a judge of understanding and he understands that you understand and you lay it out clear and you threaten them with the U.S. codes and the case law, it gives us some leverage of a possible agreement. But we can keep moving it
on. The 14th Amendment, everybody's under the 14th Amendment except those people that hold their sovereignty. They've made us all slaves.
No, white people
you have to come
are
out
not
from
under
it. Huh? Huh?
You're in there because you have responded and you have consented. It's just like when you join the Army, man. You give up certain rights. You get certain privileges and you give up certain rights. So when you go into the system and you give up your rights for privileges, guess what? You're a slave, and I don't give a shit what color you are. You're bound under those rules. We might as well be picking cotton in the field right next to the black people because that's
I don't agree.
Well, otherwise, listen, those black people did not need the 14th Amendment. They are under the Declaration of Independence, where all men are created equal. And the day they signed that, they knew they were going to have a problem with the slaves. They knew that eventually they would have to free them. And not only that, black people weren't the only slaves. There were Irish slaves. Who do you think built the canal over here in New York? Those were white slaves.
But the Supreme Court said they were Negro slaves that were called under the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, but that doesn't look at it. All a slave has to do to come out from under being a slave is to recognize they're a slave and decide not to be one anymore and say, hey, I'm one of the people. What are you putting me in that category for? And that moment, that day, they are free. And now they can start exercising their freedom,
start pushing around
U.S. codes and case law and kick ass.
There's no contest to that. And my son doesn't understand that either. But you can't contest that at all.
No, I understand that, but that's the message we're trying to get out to people.
Yeah.
People have, look, if you want to be free, you have to start thinking free, then you have to start acting free. And when you think free and put forth the action of that freedom, now you're free. Until then, you're a slave, okay? And the more people that do this, the quicker we're going to turn this thing around. And we can turn this around if we can get a momentum of people doing it.
You know what one of the first signs of a sovereign is? He has to act like a sovereign.
Well, yeah. It starts off with thinking like a sovereign. Then those thinkings, those thoughts become action. Yes.
Right, exactly.
Then now you've been born again in a different way for us.
Well, what about this business of trying Obama trying the so-called terrorists with the full immunities of the constitutional rights, and people say, oh, no, they should be tried in a military tribunal. They should not be afforded the constitutional rights of an American citizen. And I don't agree with that.
Well, I think they have the right to deny them of the citizens' rights, but they have no right to decide to ignore them or to not permit them their unalienable rights.
Yeah.
So they can legally, in their legality anyway, in their pretended laws and systems, all their fantasy world there, they can in their perspective legally deny them. And they'd be right in denying them of their privileges of the 14th Amendment. But they can never, if those people are wise enough to understand, wait a second here, I got unalienable rights. You see, unalienable rights goes to all mankind. You can't say to an individual of any other group of people, a Russian or a Chinese individual, or I don't care where they come from, you can't tell them they ain't got unalienable rights because that comes from God. And once they call upon that, you have to give it to them in this country. And if this country has hold on them, they're representing the people. They better give it to them because we need to back that up then.
The 14th Amendment doesn't recognize their unalienable rights. It says that they have privileges.
That's right.
It makes them cattle.
Right, exactly.
And these guys coming in, I mean, I don't know what rights that I have as a citizen as opposed to my natural rights that would benefit me as an American. What rights does an American have that we would not bequeath upon another person that's claiming his natural rights? What's the big deal?
There can be none.
Huh?
There can be none. You can't argue that. Every man is under God.
You said that they can't deny them their unalienable rights. They can only deny them. Well,
right. If they don't know enough to realize for it the correct way, then they're gonna succumb to it. Not that that's right, but they're gonna succumb to the 14th Amendment and all of these criminals.
Okay, so you get some guy over here. He's not naturalized. He's a foreigner. Okay.
Right.
And they said, well, you can't give him rights like he's an American. But
and you and I are aware of this, right? We're watching this, correct?
If he's unnaturalized,
you and I, Gerard, are aware of this story. You're putting up a story, and we're aware of this. We're watching this happen, right?
Yeah, we'll take the case.
Well, we'll take the case if they'll have us. You see, the point is if we can get the truth into the court on their behalf, then we can make a change and a difference. You know, look, our country was founded on this. When George Washington, when he started taking prisoners and he saw that the prisoners were starting to be mistreated, he pulled his troops together and gave them the ultimatum. You know, these people are human beings, and it doesn't matter what the English do to us. We're not going to become them. You treat them with respect. You give them 2 to 3 meals a day. If you're getting 2 meals, they get 2 meals.
What they're trying to say is that having rights as an American would allow you to get away with a crime somehow, that somehow you can't have justice, complete justice under this system for somebody who comes in and terrorizes your people.
Who says this?
That's a lie. They want to make it seem like there's another system. Well, we'll take them out to Guantanamo. We'll waterboard them and we'll get true justice. That's not they're going to get less truth out of that system than you will out of our system.
Well, absolutely.
Yes, John.
You also won't get the blessings of God. You get the curse of God, too, out of that system.
I understand, but there's no reason not to try them like an American citizen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nothing that I have that I can't give to him that's gonna cause him to get away with something.
The only reason we don't have that and they get away with this is because we don't have a George Washington in power. We have Nazis and Marxists in power. That's the problem. But
what they're saying is, if let's say that this guy was arrested and the cop didn't have used probable cause and stuff, that he could get away with his crime because we're offering him those protections under the Constitution that says that there's no unreasonable search and seizure and all this other stuff. So what they want us to believe is we can't offer that type of protection to somebody who's not an American. Why?
But John,
it takes a mature person to get beyond that point, as I'm sure you realize. In other words,
laws are designed to make cops do their job properly. So what is it? The cops don't want to do their job properly when it comes to these other people. They want to treat people differently. They want to spy on them and break into their homes and not Mirandize them and not have them safe in their personal effects. We won't offer them those things as Americans. Listen, they're over here under our system.
Right.
So as long as they're here, we could try him. And we could deport him later back to his country. But while he's here, he should have the full protection, just like you do and I do.
Give us the full protection. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I agree with you. But they don't even. They think we're 14th Amendment citizens also.
Listen, I think it's a scam that Obama's doing. Obama supposedly snuck him into New York City to be tried in a civilian court. Why do you think he's doing that? There's a reason he's doing that, because he's trying to make a statement here. People are going, oh, he should be tried in a military tribunal. What are they doing? The people that think that he should not be tried in a civilian court, what are they saying? He needs to go to Guantanamo to get waterboarded? That's what he needs? That's what they're sticking up for. Obama's
they think that that's legal. They think that because they've written all their crazy laws. I mean, we have a guy in the White House that thinks he can send drones out and assassinate American citizens.
Why is the murderer in the White House sending this so-called terrorist to a civilian court to be covered under the American constitutional system? Why is he doing that? Did you ask yourself why? Why did Obama take this guy from across the ocean, sneak him into New York, into one of our local courts, instead of trying him as a military combatant under a military tribunal, which if he was an enemy combatant, that's where he would be tried?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't thought about that. I don't know.
You know, you have to think about it, because this guy doesn't do anything that doesn't have a consequence. And so, you know, this business of trying these terrorists in our civilian, our so-called civilian courts, quote-unquote, which they're not because they're admiralty courts anyway. I mean, that's kind of the point.
Exactly.
And Obama is sneaking this guy in there, and people are getting pissed off and say, oh, no, he needs to be tried by a military tribunal. What Obama is doing is pushing the issue to undermine our rights, because ultimately we're all enemy combatants because he's already signed those things. So he's going to get the people all pissed off and say, oh, no, anybody that was making war on the United States or the United States government, i.e. Obama, who was doing unconstitutional stuff, is a military combatant, and he doesn't get Mirandized, he doesn't get rights, he doesn't even get privileges, he gets sent to Guantanamo to be waterboarded.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's doing. He's pushing this issue so that the people say, ah, and so then what Obama will do is make everybody some sort of a military combatant or a terrorist, so that you have no rights, there's no habeas corpus, you have no rights to a phone call or a trial or anything else.
Well, with that, let me end the recording. We'll continue talking, but let me end the recording. It's getting way too long. It's 2 hours already, so hang on 1 second.
Yeah. Hello?